Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us on The Conversation on this Aloha Friday, March 14th. Today we're talking about the economy, and we're opening our phone lines for a call-in show. It's not just the uncertainty over a government shutdown, a volatile stock market, tariff threats, trade wars, and massive government layoffs. The private sector is also trimming its ranks, and the demoralizing climate of fear can't be good. Are we headed for a recession? To help us navigate through this time and think clearly, we hear from economists from the University of Hawaii and the state. How are key sectors of the industry adjusting their forecasts? We talk about what's ahead, and we want to hear what's on your mind. Are you worried about a recession? Call in and join our roundtable talk. The numbers to reach us, 808-941-3689 on Oahu, or toll-free, 877-941-3689.
Support for HPR comes from Nāreit Hawaii, which supports nonprofits that are providing affordable housing on Maui to help break the cycle of poverty for residents experiencing homelessness, such as HomeAid Hawaii. NāreitHawaii.com.
I'm Bert Lum. Today on Bite Marks Cafe, we catch up with the managing director of the Hawaii Angels. Find out what this angel network does and what the startup investor ecosystem looks like. That's this evening at 6:30 on Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for HPR comes from Leeward Theater. Na Le Hulu Ika Veikiu performs Kupu Kupu, a new production featuring musical twists, tomorrow and Sunday. leeward.hawaii.edu/theater.
Tuned to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Today we're talking about the economy. And joining us this morning for our call-in show is state economist Eugene Tiam. We also will be hearing from Carl Bonham from the University of Hawaii Economic Research Organization, and he will be joining us shortly. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning.
So I thank you for joining us. I understand that you have been summoned by state lawmakers, so we might lose you on the back end of this show. And we are awaiting Carl Bonham's arrival. I know he was meeting with the governor just before this. So both you gentlemen are in high demand.
Yeah, this is, legislation time. There's a lot of demand for economic data.
Yes, yes. Well, that's just life at the legislature. But, you know, the Council of Revenues met this week, and it adjusted its forecast of what the state would likely collect in our state coffers. And that's important because lawmakers need to know what they can count on to spend. The Department of Business and Economic Development and Tourism made adjustments to its outlook as well. Talk about that.
Yes, I think the Carl will talk about the council revenue forecast, and I think they did 2 days ago. Then the Department of Business, Economic Development and Tourism, we released our first quarter 2025 economic forecast last week, Wednesday, on the 5th of March. So we actually lowered our economic growth rate for this year, 2025. As a matter of fact, if you look at the nationwide, forecast by about 50 economic forecasting organizations, they forecast the economy for the U.S. and for the whole world every month. They release the data around the 10th of each month. So the March data just released a few days ago, and they actually decrease the economic forecast for the whole world. For the U.S., for example, in February, the forecast was 2.2% growth for this 2025, and now it's down to 2%. For next year, 2026, it was 2% in February, Now the projection is 1.9%. And the decrease all over for all the countries. I think this is mainly due to the uncertainty of the federal policy. I think we also, for the state, we reduce our economic projections from 2% in the previous quarter, the fourth quarter 2024, to 1.7% in the first quarter. It is not a recession, but it's just slowing growth.
Yes, but we have to temper our expectations given all these different factors beyond our control.
Yes, I think there's a lot of uncertainties. But also, I think because of that, we have been looking at the consumer confidence level for the U.S. It has been declining. And we see Hawaii, we have a higher inflation. I think we are one of the highest in the nation. And the national inflation is declining. The rate is declining because it was about 3% last year. And for the most recent number in February, the U.S. inflation, it was about 2.8%. It's a decrease, and that is good news. But Hawaii inflation, we are 1 percentage point higher. We are higher than the U.S. It has been higher than the U.S. since November 2023, and it will stay high. Mm-hmm. I think that is one of the factors that we driving us to lower the economic growth.
And you did also just this morning release unemployment numbers for Hawaii.
Yes, there are several data released in the last 2 days. I think one is the unemployment number we released. It is for January 2025. And the number actually shows the labor market has been very stable. So we have a 3% unemployment rate, and it has been 3% for the previous 7 months. For the U.S., unemployment rate is 4%. So we are 1 percentage point lower than the U.S. I think that is good.
Mm-hmm.
This indicates that Hawaii's labor market is pretty much stable.
Okay. Well, I do want to urge our listeners to call in with their questions or comments about the economy. You can call us at 808-941-3689 or toll free 1-877-941-3689. And, earlier this week, we did talk with the Hawaii Tourism Authority. Daniel Naho'opi'i is the interim head, and I asked him about the concern about Canadians being encouraged to vacation at home as opposed to the U.S., as well as other HTA concerns. Here's what he said.
Because they consider Hawaii a different part and not really associated directly with the values of the United States, we have been playing on that to attract the Canadian travelers here. There, our value system and political views more aligned with theirs. However, things such as federal cuts, we're concerned. Definitely many of our meetings and convention sector are funded by federal grants. You know, a lot of the conferences that people attend here are scientific or research, and those are typically funded by federal monies. And usually the spending and travel budget is what gets cut first. The other thing we're worried about, you know, some of our national parks and support services are also federally funded, and we're concerned that particularly in the summer months, there may be some limits on employees, and there may be some shutdown days or maybe some backlog and slow traffic. There may be create some traffic in terms of people going in and out of the park or not enough services to maintain the parks.
We did see the news about Korea adding flights, so that's good for our lift.
Yes, Air Prima is one of the newer airlines that we're hoping to see. We've been working closely with them. They had some test cases over the past couple of years. And Canadian visitors were one of the first geographic segments that came back right after the pandemic, and they have been good for us. You know, international visitors are always welcome, mainly because they not only spend well, you know, in all of their international shopping, but also they love to do activities and get out. We still have to recover from our Maui wildfires. So, you know, Maui as a whole, visitations to Maui as a whole is still down from pre-wildfire days, so before 2023. the governor recently released additional funding for us to create marketing incentive programs in California to attract more visitors to go to Maui to support the hotels and then also the small businesses, restaurants, etc. So we're working on that program for the rest of this year in 2025. And then continue to build back our international markets, Japan, Korea, as you mentioned, Oceania. We've done multiple programs to try to solidify that area to balance out what we may see as some restrictions that are happening in travel. You know, the forecast for airlift or the number of air routes and seats coming into the U.S., coming from the U.S. to Hawaii, shows a little bit of slowing down for the rest of the year and maybe into next year. And I think that's what's going to be kind of a level pace for next year and not the growth pattern that we've seen in the past. So steady state is good. You know, everybody wants tourism to be the growth and, you know, move us up. But however, tourism at a steady state is good. What we need to do is create a better balance between U.S. Domestic and international visitors. U.S. visitors do bring the volume of visitors, but the international brings the spending and also gives us the diversity that we're looking at as an international destination. So what we'll be working on really is to create that sensitive spot of trying to get that balance.
Yeah, we got to get that balance. And so, yeah, Eugene, you know, what are your thoughts on this tourism piece?
Yes, I think one of the main reasons we lower our economic growth is the slowing down in the tourism industry. We do see that the international is weak, especially from Canada. So the recovery rate, we are comparing with 2019. We consider that is a base year or normal year. For 2024, the recovery from Canada is 80.2%. And from Japan is 45.7%. And from the first 10 months of this year, 2025, we have the airline schedules. So we use the air seat as an indicator for the supply side of the industry. So we do see the international air seat coming to the state will decrease by 5.5%. For Japan, will decrease by 5.5%, and Canada will decrease by 5.1%. But because I think we will still have some room for Japanese visitors. Mm-hmm. The reason is, although the Japanese visitor recovery rate was low, but because of the on the flight, we have a lot of rooms. And that means in the industry, we call the load factor, mm-hmm. which is how many seats were occupied. So the load factor from Japan is still low. That's one reason. And the second reason is that a lot of people on the flights, they are Hawaii residents. So in the 2019, there's about 93% of the passengers, they are Japanese. Mm-hmm. They were Japanese visitors. But in 2024, that number, it became about 80%.
Yeah, so that's something we're going to have to just keep an eye on as we look, you know, to I guess our hopes are high, but we have to be realistic. And, you know, Carl Bonham just walked into our studio, and Carl, I know we acknowledge that you just met with the governor. Eugene has to leave at 11:30 to go meet with state lawmakers. But anything you want to add just on the tourism front?
So, you know, I'm not sure what DBED's tourism forecast is. I didn't see their most recent release. For us, in our most recent forecast, it's hard to believe it only came out 2 weeks ago. It's like every day feels like it's a month now. And our forecast for the international side was basically completely flat. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the risk to Canadian visitors. I'm a little skeptical that the Canadian visitors are going to stay away in droves. And plus, we won't really feel that effect until next winter, right? Because we're largely past the you know, peak travel period for Canadians.
Right, the snowbirds have gone.
And, you know, we had in our forecast for the last last two quarters, we had anticipated some improvement in domestic visitors, and we actually ended the year on a pretty strong note. But we're increasingly worried about that. So our forecast for the domestic market was actually for a decline in next year and the year after, mostly associated with the weakness in the U.S. economy. But with the uncertainty, the turmoil that's happening, the stock market gyrations, I think there's a risk that the higher end visitor starts to pull back and chooses not to travel. But we'll have to watch that. And Eugene was talking about the seats outlook. One of the challenges that we face is to do those calculations of the capacity utilization that Eugene was talking about. You need the passenger count data. And unfortunately, right now we don't have it. Maybe we'll get it soon, but it's been discontinued for the moment because of the changeover to the electronic forms for ag forms.
Oh,
right, that
gosh.
Used to be how you would get it. Right, the flight attendant would hand the ag forms
yes.
to the gate agent along with the manifest, and we'd know how many passengers were on the plane. So now we have to reinvent that.
Okay, a little wrinkle
that creates
there.
It creates more uncertainty exactly when we don't need it.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, so tourism is a major driver. The other driver is construction. We did reach out to Pacific Resources, a PRP partnership, and talk to Andrew Pereira. He's the director of public affairs there. You know, about this the concern of the trade wars, the tariffs, and from Canada and Mexico, and the latest is what now they're threatening to raise the taxes on booze.
Yeah,
so
we won't even be able to drown our sorrows.
Yeah, there you go. Well, here's Andrew Pereira with his concerns.
Well, it is concerning because construction has been one of the main pillars for Hawaii's economy all the way through COVID. And pre-COVID to now, we've seen construction prices increase about 30%. So when you add the possibility of additional tariffs on Canada for products used in construction, like the softwood lumber, aluminum, concrete, that only exacerbates the pressure on our home builders. And so it could have as far as reaching impact as some projects not being able to pencil out until all of this gets sorted out. You know, luckily we have about $10 billion of runway and future projects and ongoing projects in front of us right now. We've really seen an upwards trajectory for the construction industry ever since about 2011, 2012, coming out of the Great Recession in 2009. So there's a little bit of a buffer there, but depending on how long these tariffs last, that could increase the pressure points on our home builders and lead to some projects perhaps being put off or perhaps not, you know, coming to fruition as quickly as we would like, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that's the concern, right? We're trying to build our housing inventory, and these tariffs are coming in at a terrible time. Thoughts, Carl?
Yeah, I think Andrew has it right. We do have a buffer in terms of overall activity, and you know, projects that are already ongoing are unlikely to be put on hold. But what is happening is, again, you're creating uncertainty. So builders, you know, can't get a price quote for maybe more than a month, right? So you need to buy lumber for, you know, your housing division that you're working on, or steel for a high rise, or a state project. Think about, you know, Stadium or Halava or whatever, moving Halava. All of those, you can't forecast with any reliability or even get a quote for materials long enough for your project to get off the ground. So what's likely to start happening is some projects will slow down. I mean, they'll be put. Their start dates will be postponed, and you know, again, all these tariffs could be here for 4 or 5 years. They could be here for 4 or 5 days, and you know, when you don't know what's next, businesses tend to slow down their hiring, slow down their plans, slow down their construction, and it weighs on the economy.
Yeah, and Eugene, anything you want to add? I mean, I know you've got to leave here shortly, but any thoughts about the construction piece?
I think the construction in our forecast, released last week, the construction industry is actually a bright spot in our economy. I think there are several indicators. I think we see the contracting tax base, and we consider that is an indicator for our construction competitive. The tax department released the first 10 months of data that increased 20.3%. Our estimate is about $14 billion for 2024. So in comparison with about 20, that's about $14 billion compared with about $20 billion for the visitor spending. So it is a pretty good size. Then we look at the building permit issued, granted in for the full year 2024. It increased 27.1%. And we look at the residential construction. So the authorized unit in 2024 was 5,339 units. That was the highest in 17 years. So it's increased over 70%. So those indicators show that in 2025, for this year, the construction industry is going to be good. But you know, going forward, we will see what happened to the building permit issued and what happened to a lot of the construction activity was driven by the residential and also by the government project, especially the federal.
Oh, yes. And I know the military has the shipyard project, you know, billions of dollars they're pumping in there for that modernization project. You know, I did get a question from one of our listeners. Eugene, you talked to 2019 as the base year for tourism numbers.
Yes.
Laura points out that I think Hawaii had a record 10 million visitors in 2019.
Yes.
She writes, I hope the base year does not mean Hawaii should use the 10,000 as a goal.
No, that's not a goal. Mm-hmm. You know, we fully understand. Our office also, we do surveys on the residents' opinion. We call the residents' sentiment on tourism. And we care about the views on tourism from our residents. It is not a target, but 2019 is the peak. We had about 10.4 million visitors, and we just want to see how the recovery in the tourism industry will recover. I think it will take a long time. According to our forecast, the tourism industry is not going to recover to the 2019 level until after 2028.
Okay, 2028. All right, we got to sit tight. All right, well, Eugene, we certainly thank you for your time. We know you have to run off, but thank you so much for carving up some time for us this morning.
Okay, thank you.
And we would like to urge our listeners to call in and ask a question. Carl Bonham is still here from UHERO. Call toll-free 1-877-941-3689. We'll be right back after a break.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Par Hawaii, committed to producing renewable fuels for Hawaii's airlines, electric utilities, and other industries. Learn more at parhawaii.com.
Calling Hawaii college students. Want a taste of what it's like to work in radio? Thinking about becoming a content creator or pursuing a career in live event production? Hawaii Public Radio is offering a summer internship in collaboration with Kamehameha Schools. For more information, visit hawaiipublicradio.org/jobs.
Support for HPR comes from HMSA. For over 85 years, committed to working together with employers, partners, and healthcare providers to support the health and well-being of the community. Learn more at hmsa.com.
You're back with the conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. Our guest earlier today, Eugene Tian's chief state economist. He had to run, but we still have Carl Bonham here in our studio. He's the executive director of UHERO, the University of Hawaii Economic Research Organization. And Carl, you know, we have so many outside factors that we have no control over. You know, right now the lawmakers are deciding whether there's going to be a government shutdown. And we understand there's a lot of drama on the floor there in Congress right now. But how are you looking at this time?
Boy, that's, you know, when you do economic forecasting or business planning for that matter, you're generally basing your modeling and your assumptions on the norms being in place and stability, some kind of stability in, you know, the rule of law, the, you know, the way government agencies act, and all that's out the window right now because, you know, none of the sort of normal ways that the federal government in particular acts are true anymore, at least. And so, and they're changing, you know, every hour or every day. And so as an example, when we did our, our forecast report, first forecast report after the election, fourth quarter of last year, we had to make a set of assumptions about what the administration's policies were going to be, right? Because no one knew, right? All we knew was were the promises on the campaign trail. And so, for example, we assumed a relatively modest tariff package. In other words, something that would raise the effective tariff, sort of the average tariff on all goods coming into the U.S. by about 5 percentage points. So, you know, take it from 2%, the average tariff rate, to 7%. That was the assumption we made. And then when we did our next forecast, we had to make assumptions about how many federal government workers were going to lose their jobs in Hawaii. Well, both of those assumptions are now completely up in the air, right? So the where we are today on the tariffs with the 25% on Mexico and Canada and 20% on China and it, you know, the whole gamut, is instead of a 5 percentage point increase in the effective tariff, it's probably more like a 7 or 8 percentage point increase in the effective tariff. And come April 2nd, it'll change again when we get the next tariff announcements. And while we assumed that the probationary workers would lose their jobs in Hawaii, like was happening around the world, now we've got, you know, court decisions that have said, oh, you have to rehire those people. And so it's the best you can do is make a careful analysis of the situation, try to understand the intent, and make assumptions, and then really think about scenarios. And this is what businesses are faced with, right? They have to, and households, it's everybody, right? You have to make assumptions about, are you going to have a job? And you know, are interest rates on your loans, your credit card, et cetera, are they going to change? And then you just have to adapt. So every forecast is going to be an update.
Yeah, well, I think as we, every day, as you said, is like a month, and we read the headlines and we react, but then we have to stay calm.
No, right? That's really important because there is so much news flow and so much reporting, particularly around the tariffs and around the federal, the reductions in the federal workforce, that you really do risk being sort of dragged down into the dark recesses of your mind when it comes to thinking about the economy when, you know, in fact, much of it is really just chaos. So for, as an example, you would think, and the average viewer, listener probably thinks of that we're sort of in a situation where federal government spending has been falling. Well, in fact, the most recent data from Treasury on federal government spending through February is that it's actually up. And you know, in the federal layoffs, while they're very meaningful to those workers and their families, it's a really, really small piece of the federal government budget and the overall economy. It's really the civilian response that is the private sector response that's a bigger deal. So you do have to be careful not to not to overreact to the news.
Right, but pay attention. And yes, there's a lot going on, a lot to pay attention to. But we, hope to provide context so you can kind of process what you're feeling and what your mind needs to stay sharp on. On that point where you talked about, what businesses and people need to know, we did talk with Sherry Minor McNamara, President and CEO of the Hawaii Chamber of Commerce. And, the uncertainty is tough. And, trying to bounce back, it's not easy.
We felt that during the pandemic. We felt that with the Maui wildfires. And now this is just adding to the challenges and just have a compounding effect. And with the legislature now having to reprioritize, where do the resources go at a time that we want to focus on economic diversification, because we saw what the previous challenges did to our economy, it is putting a hold on many of these efforts to have some kind of a sustainable growth in our economy. So definitely this tariff situation is having an impact on all stakeholders in the community.
Yeah, I know she was concerned about, most of our goods are imported, right? And so what are the costs going to...
So that, that doesn't make us different than, right? So these tariffs are being applied to goods that are imported into the United States, right? And so the fact that we get a very, very high percentage of our goods imported into Hawaii primarily from the United States doesn't add to the impact of the tariffs, right? It's so if a car is made in Mexico and imported into the U.S. and then shipped to Hawaii, it only gets tariffed once, right? It's the importer into the United States. But the bottom line is that the impacts are very broad. And if you look at where I think we're going, which I think that come April 1st, and then April 1st, we're supposed to get the studies that the Trump administration, by executive order, President Trump announced that we would be having these studies on tariffs for all countries, and they would be delivered on April 1. And the story is that on April 2, they're likely to announce reciprocal tariffs. And when we get to that point, then it will really apply to just about everything. And unfortunately, those tariffs are taxes that are very regressive. So the some of the places you'll see the impact the most are in things like apparel and pharmaceuticals. Our drugs prices will go up because we import a lot of drugs into the country. And when I say regressive, that means that the lower income households will be impacted more. In a more pronounced way than upper income houses. So a bigger fraction of their income will be spent on things that have tariffs on them.
And, that's going to be rough because already we have so many of our residents fleeing Hawaii because of the cost of living. And now we have to deal with this uncertainty and it's scary.
So, you are right that people flee Hawaii. They flee Hawaii for
all kinds of reasons.
Yeah. But the cost of living is sort of a catch-all that really encompasses not only the fact that housing prices and rents are extremely high and other costs are high, but it also encompasses the fact that our incomes have not grown as rapidly as they have in the rest of the country. And so our home prices are not significantly more expensive relative to the rest of the country today than they were 20 years ago. What's really changed is that our incomes have not kept up with the rest of the country. Really, for the past 15, 20 years, basically we're falling farther and farther behind in terms of income growth. And that gets to what Sherry was talking about diversifying the economy. And it's not just about diversifying the economy, but it's also about addressing things like one of the callers called in and asked about sort of the target number of visitors. The challenge is that what we really need is the visitors to spend more money, mm-hmm. right? We need what we are doing to be more productive to produce more value. And one way you do that is by having visitors spend a larger amount of money when they do visit, so that the workers get a piece of that share and their incomes rise.
Well, you know, Sherry talked about our efforts to try and diversify the economy and not rely so much on tourism and construction. But
that's an area that at UHERO we have significant research underway on that subject matter. Stephen Bond Smith, I don't know if he's been on the show, but he's written pretty extensively about why it's so hard to diversify Hawaii's economy and what kinds of policies and practices we might take to try and achieve that.
You know, I'd like to urge our listeners, if they want to comment or have a question for Carl, please call in. Our toll-free number, 1-877-941-3689 or 808-941-3689. I mean, you know, we don't know how you're feeling out there. I know just personally it is tough to try and kind of temper your emotions and you know, understand the context under which things are happening.
So one of the challenges is understanding the context is really, really difficult here because I can't point to a single economist who would look at the administration's agenda, particularly around tariffs, and argue that is a plan to make the economy thrive. And, you know, the administration has a view that the tariffs are going to bring back manufacturing jobs. Well, the manufacturing job, look at steel and aluminum, right? The target of the tariffs. I think I'll get this number right. I think there's 300,000 workers in the U.S. steel and aluminum industry. So a tiny little fraction of the U.S. economy. And yet the tariffs will ripple through the whole economy, right? They'll impact how much it costs to build a high-rise. They'll impact how much it costs to build a car, to build a washing machine. And so the whole economy will suffer through these higher prices. And anybody who imports steel to produce something in the U.S., their prices will go up and workers will lose jobs in those industries in order to support a very, very small piece of the economy. And so it's very, very hard to get your brain around why are we following this approach? And it really feels like it doesn't have much to do with economics. It has more to do with a sort of a, you know, we've been treated poorly, mm-hmm. right, by the rest of the world, and we need to get even. That's kind of what it feels like.
Well, you know, for the average person on the street, they're probably wondering about, you know, that beer that the price of beer that may go up, right, because of the aluminum cans.
Yeah.
And you may want an extra drink at the end of the day, but it's going to cost you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the aluminum and it's so pervasive, right? It's used. And I mean, if you look at the cost of steel and aluminum that goes into, and not just those commodities, but copper, and, you know, we import natural gas, we import oil, from Canada, and those will drive up costs for everyone in order to try to get businesses to invest here, to produce here. But businesses are looking at this, and particularly the chaos of it. Why would you invest in plant and equipment that's going to last 5, 10, 20, 30 years when these tariff changes could be erased at the stroke of a pen? Right, you're creating so much uncertainty that it's weighing on those business decisions, and I think we'll begin to see. So right now we have no hard data. Right, this is all sort of feelings. Right, we got the consumer confidence numbers today from the University of Michigan, and they keep plummeting, and the inflation expectations keep rising. But we don't have any hard data. But the hard data is going to be coming very soon.
Well, and I know the lawmakers have indicated that they may come back in special session in a couple of months just because of the uncertainty.
Well, and so it's highly unlikely that we will know, for example, how the budget situation has worked out in D.C., right? So the goal to extend the Tax Cuts and Job Act and to pile on additional tax cuts, that process won't be finished before our legislative session ends. And so that's places where there's some risk, right? What if they change Medicaid funding? We probably won't know that before this session ends.
You know, the concern that we have is the uncertainty. And, you know, lawmakers are trying to do their best to go through the bills and figure out, you know, what they need to pass to get us in a better space. I know the construction industry is concerned about the liability. You know, they're trying to get some laws fixed because there are these lawsuits. And I think it's just amazing that I apologize. I have a new watch and I'm beeping all over the place. You know, what do we do? I mean, I was surprised to learn that D.R. Horton has a permitted project and they aren't moving on it because they're afraid that they turn the homes over to the homeowners and then they're in court.
Yeah, in that particular case, I think my understanding is that because there was a class action and a judge ruled that basically any new home could be added to the class action. So, you know, okay, why would you build a home when it's immediately going to become part of a lawsuit? And so, you know, when it comes to building housing, the issues are there's so many, right? The regulatory environment, the legal issues with defect liability. I often describe the challenges, it's kind of like Kobe beef, right? You can't just cut the fat off the sides because it's everywhere. And the fat is the regulation, right? So when you're trying to solve the problem, it's not like you can just, you know, dissect it and take the problem away because it really is across the board in sort of every step from permitting to, you know, having to do with new building code to, you know, dealing with historic buildings. There's just so many issues that cause us to have some of the most onerous regulations and slow down construction. So, it really is a testament, I think, to the efforts of the counties and the state that we are seeing the kinds of housing construction that we have in the permits from last year.
Let's talk about workforce development because you've done a number of stories about what's being done because we're hurting all over. The construction industry apparently had a job fair on Maui and they said two people showed up and it was a retired contractor and his son. You know, and that was pretty stunning to hear that.
That is fascinating.
Yeah. And anyway, we did talk to PRP about that concern. Here's Andrew Pereira again.
We do need workers. There's a floor of about $5.5 billion for that rebuild after the Lahaina tragedy. And of course, there was fires up in Kula as well. So we're trying to get as many young people interested in the trades as much as possible, pointing out that it's a career that you can earn upwards of $115,000 a year. And then when you add the benefits for the Carpenters Union on top of that, you're talking well over $175,000 a year. So trying to open young folks' eyes as to the possibilities right now in construction and really recruit the next generation of construction workers that we're going to need for the Lahaina rebuild and so much more. So that's where our focus is right now and trying to get the workers that we need.
Yeah, and it's not just construction. I saw a hotel on the Big Island saying we need to hire, I think, 60 housekeepers this year. And it's shocking that we have nobody out there.
It is a little surprising to me that you only had two people show up at a job fair for construction on Maui. But this is something that we've been writing about since the fire, was that the number of available construction workers on the island of Maui was going to act as a drag on the recovery process. And, you know, we know that some construction firms are sending workers, as we always have seen, you know, workers who will go from island to island. And so a number of construction firms are sending workers over there, and then they have to deal with housing, right? So where do they, and if they're housing them on island, then that's putting, you know, additional pressure on the Maui housing market. But the broader issue in terms of availability of workers everywhere is just demographics. It's pure. It's really simply that our labor force is smaller now than it was at the start before the pandemic started. Our population is smaller, our labor force is smaller, and so the workers simply aren't there. And you know, the numbers got a little confusing when Census revised the population data, and I don't particularly believe that that our population actually grew in the last couple of years. I think this is an artifact of how they spent a lot of time and effort to reestimate the how many migrants were coming into the country, but then they took those migrants at the national level and they distributed them out to the states according to the demographic mix. And I just don't think it's very reasonable to believe that a whole bunch of migrants who came into the United States in 23 and 24 jumped on a plane and came to Hawaii. So the workers just aren't there.
Right, yeah, you're kind of suspect of those numbers. Yeah. We do have a caller, a Richard from the Big Island. What's on your mind?
Yes, aloha. I've been concerned, you know, we decided to stop our business because we noticed over the years in construction that a lot of the parts, you know, a lot of the stores here closed down, and it's become very hard to get construction materials and parts and tools and knickknacks here that we've forced to go online to order from the mainland. Now we notice that, for example, like just a common spring for a pruner, tree pruner, that we found is not available anymore in the state of Hawaii, so you have to call the mainland, find a company that will have one, and then the spring, the last case we just had was $12. The shipping cost was $74.
Oh, my.
And this is dominant with many other people that are doing business, especially here on the island. And there's a lot of times where we come across companies that say, we do not ship to Hawaii anymore because of the rules and restrictions, and I don't know what all the rules are. And another thing is that when a lot of companies on the mainland now do only use FedEx and UPS to ship to Hawaii, and these are the exorbitant costs, and we just cannot afford to continue to do business because we just cannot get the parts we can in Hawaii anymore, and
yes,
we cannot get them shipped here anymore. So
well,
I find that is a real bad problem.
It is, yes, and we feel your pain, the shipping costs.
So that's really interesting. You know, and we've all dealt with this, right? I literally dealt with it just a week ago, where I was, you know, reaching out to a vendor. I think in this case it was in Australia, and asked, well, why don't you ship to Hawaii? And in this case, they responded, oh, we can, but their website wasn't set up. But we've all dealt with that situation where, you know, we're trying to buy something that costs $5, and it's not available here, and they're only going to ship by, you know, one carrier, and it's going to be $40 or $50 of shipping costs. And it just struck me that there's a business opportunity there, because you know, there are businesses that will freight forward, but those are for bigger items. So there should be a business opportunity for small items where you set up the business on the mainland, and then you basically freight forward using U.S. Postal Service, right? So then essentially you get that free shipping to a destination in California, and then they package it into a U.S. Postal Service package, and you pay $10 for it to get here.
There you go. So, opportunity.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know. What else do you think would be important for our listeners to keep in mind as we navigate through this tumultuous time?
So I think there's a couple of things. One, we're not in a recession yet. That's the U.S. economy came into this year in a really strong position. I think really the one thing you could point to says that one of the greatest economies, and I say that with all seriousness, this is not hype. The one thing you could point to is the continued high costs, right? Inflation came down, but prices didn't come down. And that's actually pretty normal. The U.S. economy surprised for years in how strong it was and how resilient it is. That's a good thing. There's still a significant risk. I would say that we've probably raised our risk of a recession from probably about 15% in December to 30-35%. So it's probably doubled. And April, my thinking is that early April, we're going to start to see hard data. We'll see what the next step is on tariffs. We'll get the hard data from the March jobs report. It'll come out on April 4th. So April 2nd and April 4th, in my mind, are two pretty important days coming up pretty quickly. And they both have the potential to go really poorly. And I think that will help us to get a better understanding of sort of how bleak the outlook's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's the dreaded R word, the dreaded D word, you know. But you've got to try and sort through a lot of the noise to figure out what's important as you try and make decisions for your family, for your business, for our state.
Absolutely, and if for some households who are in areas of the economy or who have resources that aren't being directly impacted by federal job cuts or cuts to social services or cuts to university funding, their situation isn't necessarily going to change all that much. And this is the nature of economic cycles. Some people benefit, some people get hurt. And the challenge is that if this administration takes the U.S. economy down in a recession, it will impact more and more people, right? It'll become a much more broad impact. And one other piece on the sort of optimistic side is that, you know, we're not in a position where the U.S. economy is super fragile and has some kind of built-up problems, right? This is not, 2008, right? So we don't have a huge overhang of debt. So there's no particular reason to think that this has to be a long, prolonged downturn, if and when it does happen.
And then sometimes Hawaii, gets insulated. It doesn't hit us. We have to wait for it to come across, for the continent and then across the Pacific. But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that can happen. It tends to happen when you have big differences between Asia and the U.S. or when, Japan is booming and the U.S. isn't. That seems a little less likely this time.
Okay. All right. So we just have to wait till April. Sit tight, keep our head above water, don't drown just yet, even with all the headlines. But we do want to thank our listeners for joining us today and to thank our guests, Carl Bonham and Eugene Tian. As Carl says, hang tight and we'll wait for the hard data and then see where it goes. That is it for our Aloha Friday. Coming up next week, we'll continue to hear how the economic climate could affect small businesses and others. Call our talkback line, leave your feedback, 808-792-8217, or email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Our program is produced by Maddie Bender, Lillian Song, and D.W. Gibson, with support from Mark Liddell and Tori DeJournay. Backyard quiz theme written for us by John DeMello, theme music courtesy of Gypsy 808. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday. Pick up the conversation.